Hey, welcome to the Diary 101 podcast. I am your host, Aka Kandelo Kandepwe, also known as Aka. We are, I would say, we're in the middle of the year. It's like now about to get in the last phase, not the last phase as such, but the last 6 months of the year. And I have just been trying to figure out that how that's going to look like for me and for my business, which is like also a way of me taking a break from social media and everything. So as much as I like doing that, one of my other favorite things to do is to meet new people and record. But today's guest is not a new person. Today's guest is somebody I have met before, and I think he wears different hats, right? He's in marketing, he's into climate change and the environment. He's a Toastmaster, and they're trying to convince me to join, which is interesting. But with that being said, today's guest is Ronald Mwape. Hi, Ronald.
Hi, Aka.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm actually so excited to be on your podcast today.
Thank you for being on the podcast. Please come back. So when you think, when if I would meet you anywhere, how best would you introduce yourself?
Yeah, great. I know that you've already done the, you know, that most elaborate introduction. I wear different hats. I'm basically a sustainability expert, but other than that, I'm a chartered marketer, and I've been a banker for most part of my life. I worked for a couple of banks, like then Absa, but then at the time I was there, it was called Barclays Bank. I've had a stint with Zanaco and also UBA, which is the United Bank for Africa. Maybe taking you back from my sustainability journey, when I did my master's at the University of Salford, I joined a society called the Green Impact, which had the mandate to catalyze sustainability initiatives within campus. So I picked a lot of interest out of there, where we looked at projects like looking at paper usage, how do we minimize paper usage within campus, looking at sustainable modes of transport. We're promoting the use of alternative modes of transport like cycling. So with that background, I got so interested into sustainability initiatives. But then my background in marketing, I worked mostly in marketing and corporate affairs. So I was spearheading most of CSR projects where I've worked before. So after my master's, I had that interest in me. But then something that really kick-started the project, like the Social Green Network. When I worked at UBA, we had a visit to one of the orphanages where they were looking after disabled children. So when we got to that orphanage, I noticed that the conditions were not very good. It was just a small structure accommodating about 80 children in very unsanitary conditions. And when we, you know, made our donations, what struck me very much was the passion from the women that looked after the children. They didn't have much, but you could actually see the passion, how they cared for the children, how they were preparing meals for them. I could see that they were so passionate about what they do. But then I again noticed that they did not have the means to help them maybe be able to support those children and be able to provide the basic needs, so to speak. So with that in mind, I posted a few pictures on social media, and people responded positively, with some of them pledging to take a step and to fundraise to to help the children. I posted a post. A lot of people responded. I remember one post from, I think, the Islamic Foundation of McKinney. And through that initiative, we were able to raise even more funds for that orphanage. So then I started thinking to say, there could be many more, not just orphanages, maybe grassroots organizations that are involved into charity work or social causes, but they are not known. They are passionate, quite all right, but they may not have the necessary knowledge or means to be able to scale their operations so that their help might have more impact. So I came up with a social green network concept. In a nutshell, it's essentially a social enterprise where we try to connect passionate individuals from in the grassroots, like in the communities, and link them to those that have the means, like corporate organizations that are focused on CSR and other philanthropic organizations. So that's a brief genesis of who I am and also about my organizations that I'm running at the moment, which is called the Social Green Network.
That's something very in-depth and also general. I like it. I'm so grateful that I got to interact with you on two different occasions.
I'm very humbled as well. Yeah.
We did the Toastmaster thing. That's why I got to meet you firstly with Uncle Mark. Then you invited me to come for the Social Green Network event. That was two days before Environmental Day. And we got to say, oh, let me have you on the podcast. One thing found very interesting about you is, like I mentioned in my introduction, you wear different hats, right? You went from marketing and banking to running a nonprofit organization that's called the Social Green Network. It's so interesting.
Right, yeah, right.
I see the relation. Like, there's everything is interrelated. How did you get into marketing?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Marketing, let me just take you maybe a couple of years back. After my undergraduate degree, which is business administration from the Copperbelt University, the good thing about business administration, it encompasses different disciplines. You find a bit of accounting in there, there's marketing in there, and there's personnel management in there. The main discipline in that. So you find that many people that have done business administration find themselves in different fields. Some of my friends are HR practitioners, for instance. Some of them are into insurance. So the first job I got was in a telecom industry. That is, that time it was called Celtel. So I started as customer care executive, and as I, you know, stayed in my role, I kept on receiving additional responsibilities, and one of which involved office sales. So from that background, I interacted with a lot of people that were into sales and also marketing, and I joined the Zambia Institute of Marketing then. And that's where my career in marketing, I think, started from. And that's way back during my times at Celtel. So from Celtel, then I did self-study with the Chartered Institute of Marketing. I became a chartered marketer. I did all the marketing courses up to the highest level, the professional postgraduate diploma in marketing then. And I've done quite a number of short courses, so to speak, in marketing strategy as well. And my roles in marketing, especially in the bank, when I joined Barclays, I was a product and marketing executive. Then when I moved to Zanaco, I was the brand manager. So you can see that most of my roles are mostly marketing roles that I've done, and that's why the marketing part of it That's where my marketing background stems from. Other than that, even my master's, I did sustainable marketing. So there again, you're able to see the combination of marketing and sustainability. And that's where now I started getting more and more into sustainability as well as marketing. So my professional makeup has been has always revolved around marketing and sustainability, so to speak.
Sustainability marketing.
Oh yes, actually, that was my major at master's level. I did sustainable marketing and social business.
Ooh, I like the social business part.
Yeah, so that fits into what I do.
I don't think that I'm the best marketer, but I also it seems like we all have to learn or master a few of the marketing techniques to actually survive the world, which I try anyway. And so I like that you've given me your history and how you got into marketing. When you look back then and now, what do you think about the opportunities there for young people to kind of get into an industry like marketing, or just even to get new entrants to jobs? What's the difference then and now?
There are quite a number of differences that I can talk about. The time I started my career, of course, you are into marketing. You would recall what was more pronounced than the traditional marketing. At that time, when you talk about marketing, there were two basic approaches then. We would talk about below the line and above the line kind of marketing. You remember the marketing mix. Then the notion was that marketing revolves around price, place, promotion, and things like that. But nowadays, marketing has taken on a different dimension. We're talking about digital marketing. We're talking about AI. We're talking about Internet of Things. So I would say that the scope of marketing has expanded greatly, and so are the opportunities that comes with marketing. Nowadays, it's not unusual to find someone working from home, just on their laptop, and the number of sites where you can subscribe to and be able to work. Not just working within the country, you can be sitting in Zambia and working in the States. So the opportunities are quite immense. And the tools, there are many tools that you can deploy to achieve your marketing goals. And like previously, I remember the time we used to do marketing campaigns, and you come back after the campaign, your boss is asking for results, and you are blank. You didn't even factor into your campaign how you're going to measure your results. But nowadays, you use your digital tools. After a campaign, results are immediate. You're able to tell whether you have achieved the objectives or not. So that's a massive, that is a significant development in marketing. There's AI now. You can do your marketing plans within a day or within a couple of hours. It's done. But those days for you to do your marketing plans and all that, it used to take a while. But things have been made much, much, much easier. And it's very easy now to conduct a marketing campaign. You can do a social media campaign, get customer insights, just on the tip of your fingertips, you get customer insights. And before, well, you have to pay more to do market research or brand health research. But nowadays, things have been made much, much, much easier because of the technological development, and with the coming of AI, Internet of Things, information is easily accessible. So is the practice of marketing.
That's so true. That's so true. And I think that I do believe that everything is easier now. We all have access to almost the same information. But what differentiates the older generation, which is you and us, is we just don't have the skill sets to sustain it. So I might have access to all those tools and I might be able to use them because they're actually very easily broken down for me. But I still don't have the skill set because skill set is brought about by growth. And I think when we're talking about AI integration and we're getting into the Western world conversation, it's something we're not really talking about in, like, okay, from a Zambian point of view, what, apart from us, the good side of it, what is the impact to the type of people we're bringing into the job industry, for lack of better terms. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm trying to digest your question. Yeah, maybe let me start from where you talk about marketing fundamentals. Yes, it's important to have a base where you understand the basic marketing principles to be able to appreciate the new developments or the new dynamics in marketing. Like from my personal experience, I would agree with you that I did my master's much later in my career, so I was able to appreciate the new developments. But then I was leaning more on my marketing knowledge, my management experience, to be able to link the two, the traditional marketing and the new marketing developments. So now, some of the things that you'd have to watch out for, maybe for the new companies or for the younger generations, I'll talk more about ethics in marketing. There's a lot of research that you'd have to do. Then again, as a marketer, most of the time, you're the custodian of customer information. Most of the time, you have to treat customer information with a lot of confidentiality. Having worked in the bank, that's a big part of my values. I value customer information. Then again, you also need to be able to watch out for what the customer needs. There are platforms, let's say on social media, there are tools that customers would use, let's say, to block advertisements. They are choosy what sort of information, what sort of adverts they would have to listen to. So those are some of the things that you'd have to be aware of as you practice your marketing. You have to ensure that customer confidentiality is paramount, customer data. And now it's actually becoming more and more pronounced. I think even in our laws at the moment, the government is coming up with the data, strengthening the data protection. Data protection is very important. Ethics as well. There's now so-called cyber laws and all that. So as a marketer, for instance, in our space, we're using social media, but we need to be aware of the current legal frameworks around the practice of marketing. We have to be members of, for instance, of the Zambia Institute of Marketing. I think you talked about joining organizations. If I want to join an organization and I have to practice marketing, I have to be a member of the Zambia Institute of Marketing. That organization practicing marketing must also belong to this professional institution like the Zambia Institute of Marketing. Then that organization also has to abide by the laws of the land. There are many laws that impact the practice of marketing. Advertising has to be ethical. There are quite a number of regulations, so to speak, but I can point you being members of the Zambia Institute of Marketing, because they conduct the practice of marketing. They also have a board that looks at the type of adverts that allowed. Some advertisements are not in good taste, so they may not be allowed to run on our maybe media, so to speak. And there's also protection of children. There's certain products that are regulated so that they do not harm the consumers. For instance, children. Certain products are sensitive, maybe the medicines and all that. We've seen lately the proliferation of different medicines. Everyone would come up with certain concoctions that they want to promote. But as a marketer that follows ethics, you have to be aware of certain practices that might harm the consumers. So as a marketer, as an organization practicing marketing, the interest of a consumer, the safety of the consumer, cannot be overemphasized. I'm not too sure if I've clearly answered your question, but if not, you are free to rephrase it, then I will attempt to tackle it in a different manner.
No, I think you're good. I think we're good. So how did, like, that's a good breakdown of some of the ethical stance professional marketing actually brings to the table. When you look back, how did this getting a scholarship change your life?
Wow, that's a nice question. I'm excited to talk about it.
Okay.
I was actually so excited when I got the Chevening Scholarship. The same Chevening Scholarship are offered by the British government. They target young professionals with a promising career and with a capacity to become leaders. Yeah. So the time I was selected, as a Chevening Scholar, I was really, really excited. And that really shaped my view on my profession and also on life. Because, when we were selected, we traveled to the UK. I could see the differences in terms of our culture. Not just as a person, as a people, how different we are, and also looking at the kind of opportunities that we're able to see there. Remember, I talked about the type of marketing that I was exposed to before. It was this opportunity I was given through the Chevening Scholarship that opened up my mind to these new sorts of, digital marketing. I remember through my course I did search and social media marketing. So there, it was a whole different ballgame, so to speak, because I'll describe it as an intersection of marketing and maybe IT to some sense. You were able to review and investigate performance of websites, breaking down content in terms of key messages. How do you break down the key messages for your campaign? You start from the search engines and all that. So that also different. Talking about our culture, as Zambians, most of the time, our culture, we are more like, I would say, community-based. We are closing kind of community, family-centered. But then our colleagues, they are more on individual basis. So there was that cultural difference where it's not uncommon in Zambia, someone would wake up, you greet the neighbors, hey, how are you neighbors? Good morning. I didn't see that. If you want to strike a conversation, let's say with a stranger, maybe you try talking about the weather. Oh, the weather is nice. And maybe it ends there. But here in Zambia, bumping to a stranger, you talk about whole lots of things.
We talk about everything, plus politics, and laugh about everything.
Yeah. Then you talk about so many things, yeah. But our friends are kind of cautious. They would watch out what you say to your stranger and all that. But there were so many positives, and one positive I picked about was about volunteerism. There's a big part of the curriculum is volunteering. You either volunteer in terms of maybe your campus area, in terms of sport, where the sports, we had people that would volunteer. Then also in the community. But in Zambia, it's there, but it's not so much pronounced. When I was did my university, my undergraduate, there were very few. There were organizations quite all right, but in terms of volunteering activities, it was not so much. So that also inspired me to say, why don't I come up with something that would promote volunteerism? Giving a platform for people to volunteer. But then again, talking about our culture, the culture of giving, I think we've grown up with the culture of giving as Zambians. We would want to help our neighbor. And we also help in church. It's mostly like the religious. But then it hasn't been defined in a way that would make giving more structured, so to speak. So philanthropy is there where people are able to give resources, they're able to give maybe their skills, they're able to give their time, but it's not more pronounced. But the culture is there. We do have the culture of giving. So we need to find a way in which we can structure this culture of giving so that we come up with a structured way of doing volunteerism in Zambia, maybe through different levels. Maybe we start with schools, universities, and also at work. When I worked for Barclays Bank, there was a policy which encouraged employee volunteerism. I remember there's a time we did a fundraising walk. I think then it was different banks that came together many years back. I think it was meant to raise funds for, I think, a girl on the Copper Belt. She had a kidney condition, she needed this. It was in the media. Then we responded. We had a fundraising walk. We raised some money, and after raising the money, my bank matched the amount of money that we had raised. So you can see that through such processes, if organizations were able to come on board, if employees are also encouraged to volunteer, then the impact will actually be more. That patient was assisted, and then they bought her a wheelchair. They took her, I think, to India for her to access, medical treatment. So that's how I look at volunteering. I picked this concept. Our colleagues in the UK, they are so big on volunteering at different levels, be it sports, yeah. You go to Old Trafford and Manchester, you'd see people volunteer there, helping with cloud control, people. So it's an essential part of an economy. It may not be quantifiable in terms of the numbers,
yeah.
But I'm sure in the future we can get there where we can say, okay, let's get people to volunteer to control this or to manage this part of the economy. And it will have a big impact on the economy, so to speak.
Well, I have to admit, when I was in the US as well, volunteering is part of the system. And a lot of people... Wait, Ronald, where are you? Should be
in... Oh, it's in my office. It's overlooks Cairo Road. I'm so sorry about it.
It's okay. Who's arrived? Well, that was just me. It's the last president back. that's the most Zambian thing.
The vice president, who knows? Yeah.
Oh, the vice president is out of the country. Okay. Going back, well, guys, that was just a break from us. But yes,
I'm just moving away from the other office. I've got actually the other office, which where there's little or minimal distractions.
Okay,
no, I think here it's better.
It's okay. You're in Zambia. I now know. I thought you're out of the country. So, like you talked about, volunteering in the Western world is actually such a big thing. A lot of people enjoy and actually put time aside. When we were there, we also got to volunteer at an elderly place. We got to clean, we got to share stuff, and we got to meet some of the staff there. And I have been, I was brought into that world early, I guess, where everybody talks about volunteering a lot. And I think I said volunteer when I was 15. And that's how I met Uncle Mark. That's where we met.
Yeah.
It's through volunteering and working with organizations like UNICEF or UN. I remember even back then, there was so much shame attached to it. Yeah, working for free? Why are you working for free? No one was thinking about it as... So society gives us a lot, right? I think volunteering is part of giving back to society in service. When we remove the government institutions and everything, I think volunteering is something we should all be thinking about. Is, as for me, an individual, what can I do to improve the world I'm living in, to make my community better, to improve someone's life? What can I do? And I always tell myself, if I can find an organization I can volunteer for a year for free, that would be great. Because there's so much you can learn from that. Like, you meet different people, different scenarios. Yeah, the culture for volunteering in Zambia is really bad. Like, really bad because of the shame base I noticed when I was younger. But again, it also really does have, like, great benefits. Even, like, up the road, your experience is going to take you places, is all I can say.
No, I cannot agree more with you. Volunteering actually has immense benefits, not just to you as an individual, like you rightly put it, you know, you do something for the community. But as an individual, it's also good for your health because it brings out those intrinsic values that you have, that you hold dearly to yourself. It brings out a sense of accomplishment if you do an event like I talked about, our visit to an orphanage. I don't want to mention which orphanage was this. Just being with the children that were, you know, just helping them, providing them with the things that they needed is so fulfilling. At the individual level, it is. Then, like you said, it's also an opportunity to meet new people. Because there are events where you go, you volunteer, you mix with other people. I talked about an event where we had, a fundraising walk. I bumped into more people. Up to now, we still connect. But other than that, you talked about volunteering to an organization and where you'll be able to work for free. That also helps you with career development. You broaden your horizon and you become more employable. People will be able to see you as an asset because of the skills that you pick through volunteering. There are a number of organizations that have programs. The UN, for example. I would also talk about FIFA. I would encourage young people to take an interest. For example, very soon, is it next year when we're going to have the World Cup? FIFA has got a platform for volunteers and everyone can register. Then if the World Cup is, for instance, the last one was in Qatar, they provide you with all the necessary logistics that you need to get there and they give you the support. Through that, you pick up skills. You pick up networks and networks, that's part of your wealth. Your network is your net worth. You see? So I cannot overemphasize the importance of volunteering. It's so important, not just for your career, but also for yourself. It's fulfilling and it's as good, you know, it's also good for your mental health. It gives you a peace of mind and a sense of fulfillment. So it's really, really important that you take volunteering also as part of your career advancement, I would recommend that.
And if you're like me, you like to travel.
Yes.
Volunteering is a nice way to travel for free. Just saying. Like, I'm always like, how do I go to this country? Not now, but then I was like, how do I go to this country? FIFA
volunteering program. The next World Cup will be in the US and Canada, something like that. So start positioning yourselves now and jump on that opportunity. You go there, volunteer for FIFA. You know, the exposure that you get is priceless.
And the people you meet.
I'm an employer, I would be able to look at you as an asset, someone who's well exposed and who's well experienced.
Yeah, that's a good take on volunteering. I think volunteering is always like one of my favorite things to talk about, because it's very undervalued, because no one really does see the importance of volunteering. But I know that if I didn't start volunteering and I didn't meet people like Mark Masaku, I wouldn't be where I am right now.
Of course.
So it's like, it really does open doors. And honestly, every time I get my way with Uncle Mark, I'm like, 10 years. Yeah. So it's something, if you start early, it will change your life by your mid-20s. It's a strategy. Because, like you said, employers want to know how you stand out, right? I always say this to people in university, is as much as we are trying to see that you can work, like, we know you can be taught. You've been doing that for how many years you've been in high school and university. But a lot of employers are looking for different sets. They're trying to know, can you work with people? Do you pick up skills easily? What type of a person are you around people? And what are you good at? What are your weaknesses? What are your strengths? You learn that more about yourself when you volunteer. So it's like one of the best things you can do is volunteer. It can even be a church. Emphasis. Even a church, you could learn so many skills by just being that person that says, hey, I'm going to do that for a few months and see how it works out.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a way to go, and it gives an opportunity. Like, let's say if you are in an interview for a job, you're able to demonstrate your skills, not just talking about your skills, but once you talk about volunteering, it's a way of demonstrating your abilities, that you could actually do what you've talked about in your CV, for instance.
True. Yeah. What was the turning point for you to go full-time running Social Green Network?
You are right. Because what I noticed, it was registered in 2019. And this is something that I was like trying out of passion.
Yeah.
It was more like an hobby for me to say, okay, so we started by spotlighting people in the communities that, like, social change makers, and then we'll try to amplify their impact, like what they do. Because what we realized then was that most of the people, there are a lot of people doing good things really in communities, but their efforts, they're doing that in isolation, and this platform was meant to do that. So I was doing it like part-time basis. And sometimes, you know, when you're overwhelmed with work, you tend even to forget about those social media platforms. So in terms of growth, the Social Green Network has been rather slow because it was like a side thing. But then, I transitioned, I think when I left the banks, I started signing up for short-term contracts. I had a two-year contract with the Daily Mail, another year-plus contract of employment. So that gave me some sort of a bit of allowance to spend more time on this project. And I started realizing that, actually, the impact that I could have with this project is quite immense. And when my project came to an end, my contract rather, sorry, came to an end, I decided to just switch from my work employment straight into my project. And I started pushing it like on a full-time basis. So that motivated me because I've, at the end of my employment contract, I found that I had more time working on my personal projects. So that actually gave me the impetus to start implementing some of the projects that had, they were just like concept notes for quite some time. For instance, the World Environment Day awareness event we had last week.
Yeah.
It's something I'd tried to do last year. I couldn't because of my commitment where I was working. But this time around, I had all the time to implement it, to sell the ideas, not just to the grassroots people, to organizations that came on board. I had to bring together a team, had more time with them to motivate them. So to answer your question, I think being out of employment, I'm not doing it as, you know, of course the other things I do,
yeah,
as a consultant in business development and marketing, but specifically for this project also, it is, I have more time to work on it, on the project. And I think I'm also leveraging on my experience, especially,
yes,
leveraging on my marketing experience, strategic partnerships that I created over, you know, over the time I've been in active employment. So that has been quite useful for me. Because I would just go to Mark at the UN, I would leverage my network. That also brings me back to the point of volunteering. Mm-hmm. After my studies, I joined our alumni group, which is quite vibrant, the Chevening Alumni Association of Zambia. We've had mentorship session with those people that are aspiring, young people especially. So I've been quite active. You talked about my involvement with Toastmasters, where we learn public speaking. So I've been volunteering my time in those activities with the Zambia Institute of Marketing as well. From 2022 to 2024, I sat on the council as a vice council treasurer. That was just the time I was, I was giving. During that time, also I was also sitting on projects committee at my son's school at Lake Road PTS School. So I got the board exposure, sitting on the board, working at senior level. So all these experiences and exposure have helped me now to start now scaling the Social Green Network. So we're building its brand. The brand is growing, as you might be able to see. Look at the coverage we received in the media for the World Environment Day awareness event. It was quite impressive. We had media coverage with compliments, ZNBC, the update program. We had one lab radio. We had the Hot FM that came to cover event. We also had 5 FM. So you can see the impact. And this is also coming from the time that now I'm dedicating much more time with the social enterprise.
I agree. What I'm learning from you right now is that sometimes before you jump into something, you're better off building your experience, because then when you eventually start building your own thing, it's very easy to rely on that experience and the network you have had over the years. You've been in the marketing industry for a while, and the fact that now that you're transitioning, you already have a community of people that are in your corner, so it's very easy to make that phone call, to get into that door, because hey, it's Ronald, he's our person. And yeah, it goes back to the volunteering part and how building relationship, it might not have just been because you're volunteering, but for anybody that might not have like the access that you had to work in, to work with big institutions, volunteering would be one of the best ways to build a community, build relationships, and have that network that can support you on what you're doing. Yes, it's one thing, like you're really
very true, very
those relationships that you have built over the years. You're still in the marketing industry, but yeah, while you were working with other organizations.
Yeah, very true. So what it is, giving time.
Yeah.
And when you talk about volunteering, it's different forms. You can give your time, yeah. You can give your financial resources. And most importantly, it's about showing up. When there is an activity, there's a social cause, just show up and be able to contribute in whichever way possible. Then when it comes to projects, like, you know, a lot of people run projects, full-time employment should not stop you from running a social cause or even a business venture. Because if you are waiting for you to stop work to be able to get into your business or social enterprise, it might not be able to work. And one thing I've learned running the Social Green Network is the fact that if you're looking for funding, and if you are looking for partnerships, partners or social investors, they want to look at a tangible thing, a tangible product. In investment sense, it's called a minimum viable product. It may not be a fully fledged product, but at least you have to be able to present something. Otherwise, if you're just writing on paper to say, oh, this is what I want to do, and it may not be that convincing to an investor or to a partner. So you need to be able to create a minimum viable product such that when you're looking for funding, you would have something to present to say, okay, this is how it will work. And this is a prototype of it. Yeah. You're able to test the viability of that product or that project. Because most investors or most partners, like coming from there, they're quite risk averse. They don't want to invest into a product that's going to fail. So you need to dedicate time. You need to invest your time, invest your resources, and build your project, at least to a minimum viable product, so that it becomes easier for you to sell that product or to sell that project. So what I was doing over the years, I was working, doing this on social media. In essence, what I was doing, I was trying to create a pilot project that I should be able to sell. So as you saw from the event we hosted last week on the 3rd of June, we had a huge turnout, and yet this is the first event that we had put together. We had Professor Mike Boo from Manchester Metropolitan University from the UK. We had Mr. Mark Maseko from the UN. We had a representative from the Lusaka Integrated Solid Waste Management Company. We had Dr. Sam Sichilaru from the University of Zambia. So these people, because I had something to present to them to say, this is what we're doing and these are the benefits. So it was easier for them to buy into that event because of the work that I've pushed in, the past few years. So as you start a project, it's important to bring it to a level where it is easy to sell to an investor or to be able to sell to a partner. I thought I needed to add that. Maybe it can help someone.
No.
in a similar way. Yeah.
It actually touches on the next question, Renard. And I totally agree. right? Like there's a difference when you just have an idea, you have a prototype and a minimal viable product. I don't know if you know about the lean methodology, right? Where, so it's for others that don't know. So the lean methodology is you doing fast things that failing fast and getting your methodology or your business idea or any idea working for you at any given point, so that if you get to present it to an investor, a partner, they see that it can actually bring value and you're always working to make it better. So when you were speaking, I was like, that makes more sense, because even for me, I'm always thinking, what next can I do? It doesn't, with the limited amount of resources I have, what next can I do? What next can happen next? That type of thing. So yeah, it does bring up the next question. So thank you so much.
Okay,
in your view, what does social responsibility play in the growth of the business?
Social responsibility, there are many ways actually that would help it to grow. First and foremost, it helps a company build its brand. And one way of, because you know, a business ultimately sells, you know, services and products to people, and people would want to associate themselves with a brand that has similar values to their values. And for a company, or a business to be able to develop those values that resonates with the communities, the strategy then they have to use is CSR, social responsibility. You have to get closer to the people. You need to be able to identify their needs, their interests, and also be able to, you need to be able to understand, let me just say, their pain points, what frustrates them. Once you understand that, then in your strategies, then you have to say, okay, this is what people need. Or maybe they do care about, if it's farming, you'll be able to provide that. If it's, let's say if it's a product, it's nutrition. For instance, I'll talk about social innovation because this is what Social Gradient Work promotes.
Yeah.
Well, let me just unpack it in this way. So that I don't do, because CSR, you talk about donations, hospitality, and different things. But I think it becomes simpler if I talk about social innovation, because it talks about making products that benefits people. For instance, there are those companies that make sugar. I remember way back, I think even now, those manufacturers, they will fortify sugar with vitamin A or vitamin that helps your children grow better.
Yeah.
Some yogurt or dairy producers, they would put certain elements in their products to benefit maybe the underprivileged. Even in mini meals, sometimes there's been time where they would put some vitamins and just to help address a social cause. Another way companies can do that is making their value chains inclusive, in the sense that they reconfigure their value chains to allow people or common people to supply maybe their raw materials to an organization. For instance, I think companies, those that produce sugar, they do have what they call outgrower schemes, where small farmers would have an assured market once they grow their sugar cane. They would take, let's say, to Zambia Sugar, and Zambia Sugar would be able to buy from them, and they would be able to make good money. And then another example I would give would be maybe a manufacturer of fruit juices. So they would allow local farmers or smallholder farmers to supply the fruit to the organizations, then they would make maybe the fruit puree to make their juices. So in the process, they're helping those people. But above that, an organization may want to become a good corporate citizen. They would go beyond their mandate and they would identify the needs of the community to say, oh, maybe the community would need a clinic. Then they would provide a clinic. So that's CSR. So I would want to combine all these strategies. Maybe it can help an organization to see where they would have more impact. And I believe social innovation would have more impact because not only does it address the social needs of the community, it also brings an income. Because if you look at the numbers, the bottom of the market, so to speak, has got more numbers than the upper part of the pyramid. You know, the way the markets are structured. There's the affluent at the top, then there's the mass market at the bottom. So if you're making a product for the mass market, you would have a return through the numbers because the turnover would be more. But the impact also, if you're fortifying your products with vitamins, the impact of your product would actually be greater because you'll be addressing both the social needs, you also be addressing the needs of your investors who would be able to make profit. So you're making profit at the same time you're addressing a social need. Social innovation can also be extended to environmental responsibility, where you would maybe want to, because I've seen some of the organizations where they've kept maybe a ranch where they put game, you know, these wild animals, the giraffes, the zebras and all that. And the government, the company would spend money, you know, feeding such. Others would support, there's this project where they look for the orphaned elephants, then they rehabilitate them before taking them back into the wild. There are companies that are supporting that. So that's also a good example of environmental responsibilities. So there are different ways in which an organization can have an impact on the environment. And if they adopt social innovation or others, they call it social value creation.
Yeah.
They'll be able to make a profit, but at the same time, they'll be able to address the needs of the community. They'll be able to make a difference in the communities where they're operating from.
Thank you so much. I hope that was very broken down, and I hope it helps somebody look at how they are running their business differently. Like you said, it will look differently for every organization depending on the type of resources, but I think all of us can do something strategically and it will actually work well for them. Yeah, so I really love the breakdown, Ronald. Thank you very much for that. Yeah, that was good. Like, even I...
Thank you.
Yeah. With that, we're coming to the end of the podcast and I want to give you an opportunity to ask me a question.
Oh, this is first and foremost, I wish to thank you. It's been it's been a wonderful conversation. These are some of the things I'm so passionate about, and I would definitely want to see not just organization, every one of us making a difference. Yeah. Now, my question obviously to you would be about... I know that you are trying to help young people, and from our conversation, most of these issues really affect decision makers, especially companies, and to a larger extent, governments. How do you plan to engage policymakers and decision makers to be able to support programs like your podcast? Because obviously, I would think about maybe someone from from the government address, you know, answering to some of the things, because there are so many gaps I see in the community that are not addressed. And your platform, I see it as a excellent tool to be able to bridge these gaps between the challenges we see in the community and the policymakers and decision makers in the corporate world as well as the government. What plans do you have for that target audience?
Well, that target audience is not the easiest to get. So they're not the easiest to access, because also the other target audience, there are few people making really big decisions that affect everybody. So when I look at how to engage them, I look at it like from the back end. It's like, how do I start slowly? So instead of me wanting to sit on the table. Yeah, so instead of me wanting a seat at their table, I am building my own table, and they would eventually approach me. They would want to have a seat at my table, because my table now brings value. And the only way I can do that is having people like you here, is growing the podcast, talking more about the work I do, and actually creating demand and credibility, and having an MVP or a prototype, and having something to actually show, right? Because I might have an idea. This was an idea roughly 2 years ago, right?
Yeah.
It's growing into something tangible. It's now an MVP. Like, it's a work in progress. It's something that I'm actually doing. So it's easier for me to, it's easier for them to want me to be at, to want me at their table than me approach them. I don't know if that answers your question, but I always think about it that way, because at first is, I want to be at that table, but a lot of people want to be at that table. And then, right. So it means, I mean, competition with a lot of people that want to be at that table. And these individuals, or this elite group, we're going to call it an elite group, in a country, we want certain people that have acquired a certain level of fame and a certain level of experience or credibility to be at that table and work with them. So for me, I always come from a place to say, I understand I do not have that, right? And 2 years ago, I did not have that, and I knew it, see. So I can't even compete at that level, because unfortunately, it is a competition. Like, so I just decided to create my table.
Yeah, which is brilliant. And very soon you're going to get to that stage where everyone will be running to you. Yeah. We are slowly getting there.
I'm okay. I don't know about other people. I just want to be a business person. I don't know if I've made peace with the fact that I will actually have influence when it comes to policies and the type of things I'm doing, right? Because of the direction the business is taking, I realize that. But otherwise, I always say this to everybody, to say, apart from the business, and maybe this is just my imposter syndrome, apart from everything else, I really just enjoy what I do. And it's a global thing for me. It's a global game.
And that's what is important, really. Yeah.
And it's realizing to say, the picture we all have might not be what the others are thinking. And it's okay that I made peace with that early. And I'm like, they're very important people. Like, those are key people in any society. I have engaged with some, and it's very interesting. It's very, very interesting. I won't say much. But then I'm just like, okay. I want to play a global game, because I'm a business person. So in the long run, it's very easier to create your own demands and cut access than to be on the supply side and no demand. So yes, you kind of wanting the approval. So yeah, it's a very interesting question. No one has asked me that. I'm out here trying not to offend anybody, but yeah.
But you've answered it so well. Yeah.
I'm always scared about these questions.
I'm like, they'll get you thinking.
Yes.
They'll get you thinking about where you want to be and what kind of influence you'd have in the next 5 years and so forth. And
it but helps it also you gets me it. Thinking how to say something. How to say something and not say something. And all the time I'm like, wow, how do I get out of this one? But thank you so much, Renard. That was a good question.
Yeah, and thank you so much for this platform and for the opportunity to speak to your global audience. I'm truly grateful. Thank you
my
very
last
much.
Question and to you. Yeah. No, sure. You're welcome. So my last question to you is, what do you look forward to in general?
I look forward to, first of all, it's behavioral change that my platform, Social Grid Network, will be able to contribute to behavioral change. It's only through behavioral change that we can implement some of the things that we talk about. Some of the things I talked about during our World Environment Day awareness event. We have policies like, you know, climate change, green economy. We do have the ban on single-use plastic. But then you see that manufacturers, they're just disposing of, polluting the environment. Even us as end users, we just, you know, I need to see a people that is more responsible. In terms of waste management, we need to be able to start recycling some of these materials that we do. And we just need to be more compassionate to the next person. If someone doesn't have, let's be able to support one another. That's why the topic of volunteering is in hand. We can talk about all these things, and if there's no change in behavior, then it becomes difficult to achieve some of the things we want to achieve. Then other than that, we also want to advocate for more policies that will allow or give more opportunities for this green environment space. We are talking about electric vehicles, we are talking about solar installations, but are we also giving the young people the skills to be able to tap into some of these opportunities coming? If we are charging people that are using plastic, but like I go to a supermarket, I pay for the, you know, 2 kwacha for a plastic bag. Where is that money going? Is it going to a supermarket? Is it going to maybe Zema, an authority that would help them implement? So I want to see policies that are clear. I want to see people are more responsible, and together we'll be able to make a big difference. Thank you so much. Thank you once again, Sophie.
I actually agree. You mentioned, before you go, you mentioned something that when we pay for our plastic, where does that money go to? It's a good question, right?
Oh, yes.
Does it go to the cleaning of, let's say, ShopRite makes us pay plastic? It's a good example.
Yeah, we do. And not just ShopRite, other supermarkets as well.
ShopRite is an example. For example, ShopRite. Yes. We buy plastic in ShopRite.
Yes.
So do they put that money in projects that help us, that help them maybe clean out ShopRite brand stuff? So ShopRite plastics, that type of thing. So there's so many organizations in Zambia that we are paying for stuff, but we can't track. So apart from the value addition, there's a markup for the use of plastic. That markup for use of plastic is not supposed to be part of their profit. So what are they doing with that money? Are they bringing it back to the community to help them dispose of some of their products? Or it's a good one. I think the climate change policies should become law, right? Because a policy is something you can get out of, if I'm not wrong. But law is like, it's under the law. This should be done.
The law must be implemented. So the law should have an effect on the behavior of people.
No, that's good. Good. Thank you so much, Renard. I loved every minute, and having you on the podcast has been a pleasure. I really do hope that people can follow your work. So if someone wants to learn more about you and your work, where can they find you?
It will be easy on our social media platform. You can just follow our social media handle at Social Green Network. So you should be able to tap into our social media platforms. We also have an email address, which is info@socialgreennetwork.org. Or if you like, is it ORG?
Yeah.
You can send your comments, and you can also reach me on my mobile number and my social media pages as well.
Great. Thank you so much. His social media pages would be Ronald Mwape. So thank you so much. I really, really enjoyed this. Thank you so much for being on board.
It's my pleasure. I enjoyed this conversation and I enjoyed being on your platform. Wishing you all the best. Thank you.
Wishing you all the best too, Ronald. Bye for now.
Bye. Thank you.